After having worked for a month of 18-hour days and being sick and everything that was going on, I remember just going outside and just sobbing because I couldn't believe we'd actually done it, number one, and what it meant to the people there.
In Zimbabwe, as women, we are born with no rights, sexually that is. As a child, a teenager, and a fully blooming woman, you have no sexuality. Your ideal and your role in society is to be a mother, to be pregnant, and to be nurturing.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. General Assembly resists spousal benefits for queer UN workers, Mama Mary makes a difference in AIDS-ravaged Uganda, and Zimbabwe's lesbians counter culture and fight for rights. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 10th, 2004. United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan's extension of spousal benefits to the legally recognized partners of some gay and lesbian UN employees came under fire from the UN General Assembly this week. The Secretary General has the authority to determine personnel practices, but opponents of the move claim that defining family should be left to the General Assembly. The benefits were protested by dozens of delegations, including the Vatican and Islamic and African nations, on the grounds that they offended religious beliefs and threatened families. Ironically, among those complaining that recognizing same-gender couples as families is unacceptable to most nations were many of the countries which recognize polygamy. Their male citizens who work for the UN can split spousal benefits among up to four wives. That recognition of diversity was part of the basis for Annan's extension of benefits, which applies only to employees whose home countries recognize same-gender relationships, and even then only if the national delegation to the UN specifically agrees to it. The General Assembly called on Annan to review the policy, which his office had already agreed to do following a similar resolution by a budget committee last week. But it's been suggested that the challenge to the Secretary General's authority will tend to harden his support of it.
In Italy, the status of same-gender couples has advanced in Tuscany. The Regional Council Statute Commission this week completed two articles of a statute developed in conjunction with gay and lesbian advocacy groups. While honoring marriage, the measure extends recognition to other kinds of domestic partnerships and families. It also makes what it calls sexual tendencies a category protected from discrimination, bringing the region into line with European Union standards.
The first test is underway for Britain's new laws against employment discrimination based on sexual orientation. Those protections came into force last year as part of a move to incorporate European civil rights laws into Britain's national statutes. What's believed to be the first employment complaint brought under the new protections will also be challenging their exemption for church-related institutions, an exemption that's already under review by a British court in a lawsuit brought by trade unions. The discrimination complaint comes from an unnamed social worker who says a Catholic charity withdrew a job offer after he disclosed his long-term committed relationship with another man.
Gay and lesbian U.S. federal civil servants are protected from employment discrimination, the Office of Special Counsel affirmed in a statement this week. OSC's new head, Scott Block, reportedly responding to pressure from the Bush administration, said, "It is the policy of this administration that discrimination in the federal workforce on the basis of sexual orientation is prohibited." OSC is a semi-autonomous agency which responds to claims of discrimination in civilian federal employment, and it acted against anti-gay bias for more than 20 years. But Bush appointee Block had recently deleted all references to sexual orientation protections from the agency's website and other materials. He had claimed that his reading of relevant regulations found those employees' off-the-job conduct, but not their status, as he referred to sexual orientation, to be protected. But this week, Block declared that OSC has always enforced claims of sexual orientation discrimination based on actual conduct. Based on its review, OSC has concluded that such authority exists in cases other than actual conduct, when reasonable grounds exist to infer that those engaging in discriminatory acts on the basis of sexual orientation have discriminated on the basis of imputed private conduct. Such inferences apply to all claims, including, but not limited to, sexual orientation discrimination claims.
Last week, Democratic Congress members demanded action to restore government job rights, and the White House issued a statement that seemed to support them. Some of those Democrats, including open gay Barney Frank of Massachusetts and open lesbian Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, responded to this week's OSC turnaround. Their joint statement expressed pleasure at the reaffirmation of discrimination protections and emphasized the importance of judging government workers solely on their job performance. It went on to urge Block to repair the uncertainty he'd created by restoring the references to sexual orientation to the OSC website and ensuring that the reaffirmed policy is stated in all appropriate documents. Block's own statement indicated that the website currently is consistent with sexual orientation protections, but he added that OSC intends to review and revise those materials as necessary to ensure that employees are fully aware of the protections provided. Gay and lesbian organizations, which had drawn attention to Block's earlier moves and lobbied against them, welcomed his reversal. Log Cabin Republicans political director Chris Barron told The Washington Post that it's unfortunate that in the year 2004 we actually had to spend time debating something that has been clear for 30 years. National Treasury Employees Union President Colleen Kelly said Block had generated confusion and anxiety in the federal workplace for no good reason.
In other internet-related news, Saudi Arabia agreed to unblock two gay websites last week. In response to protest by the group Reporters Without Borders, the Saudi government's Internet Services Unit re-examined GayMiddleEast.com and 365Gay.com and wrote that, since no pornographic content was found, the ban has been lifted. Other sites which may include nudity, such as Gay.com, remain banned.
And the internet is now the only way left for the more than 1,000 members of Singapore's gay and lesbian civil rights advocacy group to meet. Singapore this week denied official registration to the group called People Like Us and warned of harsh punishment should its activities continue. Spokesperson Alex Au said the group would comply by not holding further meetings. People Like Us, which had an earlier application rejected in 1997, will appeal the latest dismissal to the Home Affairs Ministry. The group is also asking the Registrar of Societies to explain the refusal, whose basis in law is reserved for organizations with purposes that are either unlawful, prejudicial to the public peace, welfare, and good order, or contrary to the national interest. Singapore's gross indecency law provides for up to 2 years imprisonment for homosexual acts, but is reportedly rarely enforced.
Zanzibar's parliament this week enacted a government bill to increase sentencing for homosexual acts and to criminalize same-gender marriages. The island in the Indian Ocean has considerable autonomy and independent government despite its status as part of Tanzania, and nearly all of its residents are Muslims. But it's also a tourist destination, and its politicians expressed concern that gay and lesbian marriages were being celebrated in its hotels. Now, men who marry there can be imprisoned for up to 25 years, while women who marry there can be imprisoned for up to 7 years. Anyone presiding at those marriages can also be prosecuted and imprisoned.
Zanzibar could be kissing some big bucks goodbye as it drops off the list of honeymoon destinations for gays and lesbians. This week, Forbes magazine estimated that legalizing marriage for same-gender couples now living together in the U.S. would mean another $16.8 billion for that nation's wedding industry. Forbes admits it might take a few years for all of that windfall to be realized, but the industry's already pulling in $70 billion per year. Forbes' estimate may even be conservative, since it's based on couples counted in the 2000 census.
And finally, the prestigious Pulitzer Prize was awarded this week to openly gay U.S. author Doug Wright for his one-man play, I and My Own Wife, which chronicles the life of the late famed German crossdresser Charlotte von Malsdorf. Born Lothar Berfelde, von Malsdorf survived the Nazis and the Soviet occupation of East Germany as a self-identified transvestite. After reunification, she became a media celebrity until her death 2 years ago at the age of 74. It took a decade for Wright to develop the play from more than 500 pages of transcripts of his interviews with von Malsdorf. Previously best known for the Marquis de Sade tale, Quills, Wright shares credit for the evolution of his prize-winning play with two people. Its director, Moises Kaufman, who coordinated the Laramie Project about Matthew Shepard, and Jeffrey Mays, the lone actor who portrays all of its 40 characters.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 10th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
We've got a report from the trenches of Zimbabwe's lesbian rights movement later in the program.
2003 was a queer year to remember, and you can keep it alive forever thanks to three very special CDs from This Way Out. Steve Pride recalls the most notable queer-themed offerings on the big and small screen.
Actually contains no sinking ocean liners, no high-speed car chases.
My film is about a few years that I spent pretending to be somebody else before I went to prison.
We're friends of 43 years, and we're lovers of 27 years.
It centers around a gay male couple who are enforcers for the mafia.
You wouldn't even think, you know, 20 years ago, that you'd ever would have this many gay and lesbian films.
Our film is about Byron Rustin, this gay African-American civil rights hero.
This is a queer buddy movie.
It's a social, gender, sexuality, drama comedy.
Why are you hiding in the potting shed?
I wasn't hiding.
It's all about identity. It's all about visibility.
The producers of Audiophile choose their favorite out music.
I want to double my wardrobe. Leave the seat up late at night.
Say a prayer for me, Sarah.
I like a man who is crazy about me.
Best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while. I like Mike.
And there's an audio scrapbook of the biggest queer news stories of 2003.
It says intended bridegroom and intended bride. How are intended spouse and intended spouse?
The Supreme Court says that we matter and we're valuable.
Being gay is not a crime.
To press forward with this consecration will be to turn our backs on Almighty God.
It's not about me. It's about so many other people at the margins.
Finally, all families in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts will have the opportunity to be equal families under the law.
Your collection of all things GLB&T won't be complete without these compilations of the year's queer politics and culture. For all the details, log on to thiswayout.org.
Going to Africa, literally, in thousands upon thousands of people, I would be the only white person. I felt like I really stuck out, not only being a woman of size, but also being very white.
Last week on This Way Out, we began an incredible journey with AIDS Healthcare Foundation co-founder Mary Adair. In 2001, a new branch of the AHF called Global Immunity sent Adair, a lesbian activist and physician's assistant, to set up an HIV clinic in the rural community of Masaka, Uganda, about 2 hours outside of the capital city of Kampala. The effort has been a mutual learning experience that Adair shared with correspondent Nancy Beverly.
Uganda's third world experience was unlike anything Mary had ever been through before.
It was amazing experience because I just remember that in the city of Kampala itself, they had these huge vulture-like birds that were just like 12-foot wingspan that were like flying all over the city, getting into the garbage. People on bicycles and walking and motorcycles and cars all jammed in together with absolutely only one stoplight in the whole capital city. And then driving, actually having to cross the equator to get to Masaka and going into the very rural areas where literally people had no electricity or water and would walk for miles to a local stream to get water and then carry it back on top of their head or to carry it on their bicycles, you know, riding uphill for miles. I was just amazed.
Mary's arrival at the clinic to be in Uganda proved to be a memorable moment.
When I went to the clinic, when we were first going to develop it into actual a working clinic, there was absolutely nothing in these rooms. It was just a ward. And when I came in, there was this old woman bent over, sweeping, and sweeping the ground and sweeping the areas. And I thought, well, who is this woman? And they said, oh, that's Jeja. I said, wow, what is she doing? Well, she found out this was going to be an HIV clinic, and she had 8 children, and 5 of them have died of AIDS. She just was so excited that there was going to be treatment that she sort of took over cleaning the place, and it's spotless. I mean, you could eat off the ground. It was amazing. I walked up to her, and she just ran and greeted me, and she spoke no English. I spoke no Lugandan, and we just started talking and, you know, with hand signs and just, you know, nonverbal kind of communication. And we just sort of fell in love with each other. Every day she was there cleaning and making it spotless and doing it for free. It was just something she decided to take on, and she planted flowers and she did all this stuff. I really wanted to help her or to give her something for doing that, because she was extremely poor. We actually hired her to actually do the work cleaning at the clinic.
Before she could see patients, Mary had to help recruit a doctor, a nurse, and office staff. She bought curtains, medical supplies, all the furniture, and she waited in the halls of the Ministry of Health for them to sign off on the clinic. And then it came time to meet the prospective patients.
It was certainly a remembrance of early days of AIDS here. People were very wasted and very sick, and you felt like their life was going. You saw it in their eyes. They didn't have hope. And yet, they came. Hundreds of them came to be screened for these first positions, and that was very difficult.
And yet, the pilot programs were a success.
Well, the success was tremendous. We 97% success rate. Success was people taking their antiretroviral medications without fail. In the United States, we have maybe an 80% adherence rate for any type of chronic disease. With HIV, in order to suppress the virus and not get resistance, you must have 95 or greater percent adherence rate. So to have 97% adherence rate in an African culture where they've never seen medications before, where they don't have water and electricity in their homes, and it was truly an amazing event, and showed that they were willing to take these medicines to live, and that was their goal, is that they wanted to live to see their children grow and to live their lives.
When Mary went back a year later to do follow-up on the original 20 patients in Uganda, she had a remarkable experience at the clinic one day when a woman came running up to her.
They call you Mama. So I was known as Mama Mary, which has become a very big joke at where I work. So she says, Mama Mary. And I looked at her and I thought, I don't know who she is. And she says, don't you remember me? And I said, oh, my God, when I saw who it was. And it was the first woman that we put on treatment. And she was very ill and very wasted. And we really didn't expect her to live. And here she comes running into the office looking like a totally different person and going back to work and leading her life and happy. And we just started jumping up and down in the middle of the office and crying and stuff. Because I remember when we gave her the medicine, her first dose of medicine, she looked up at me and she says, maybe I'll live to see my children grow. And after having worked for a month of 18-hour days and just and being sick and everything that was going on, I remember just going outside and just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing, because I couldn't believe we'd actually done it, number one. And what it meant to the people there was, it just hit me. And it was this feeling of complete fatigue, and also being so humbled by being able to be fortunate enough to do this work, is the way I kind of see it. It's a gift to me. And then coming back a year later and seeing her so well was just amazing. And she said to me, well, did you see the other people outside? Because there was it was the clinic day and people were coming in for follow-up. And there were about 7 of the people that were the initial 20. And I had walked right by them and didn't know them. And so we all ended up taking pictures together and laughing and talking and sharing stories. And it was just an amazing event. And it makes all the hard work worth it.
When Mary returned a year later, She was also met by JJ, the woman who had started out sweeping the floors.
She put on her wedding dress to greet me because that was the nicest thing that she had. And to thank me and bringing out bananas and different things to greet me when I came back. And it's just stories like that that happen over and over again because people want this so much and they're so grateful on a level that you don't see as much here because we have so much. I don't think we appreciate it. And they appreciate everything that we do. It's very moving.
Since the original pilot programs, funds have become available for over 100 more patients in Uganda. And last fall, Mary went to South Africa to scale up treatment for 250 more people there. Most recently, February 16th, in fact, she returned to expand treatment abilities in Uganda even more. The AIDS Healthcare Foundation is now vying for some of the $15 billion that President Bush has proposed for Africa. The goal is 3x5, 3 million people treated by 2005. A question that Mary occasionally gets is,
why go to Africa? I mean, why not just stay here and work? There's so much to be done here in people of color communities where prevention efforts haven't worked and rates of infection are exploding in young African-American women. It gives you a perspective about life, and it really isn't about who or when. It's about people. It's just about caring. It's just about trying to be part of life, of bringing health care to other places. And with that, you are able to then expand what you're doing here. It somehow it gives you a sense of self, a sense of purpose. I always say if I die tomorrow, I feel like that my life was worth something. And I guess I come from that very liberal background, having been a gay and lesbian activist since the early 70s, is that I really believe in what we're about as a community and want to share that.
That was Mary Adair speaking with Nancy Beverly about the AIDS Healthcare Foundation's work in Uganda. The AHF's website is www.aidshealth.org.
And I'm Maria, and together we're Zrazy.
And we're crazy about This Way Out,
the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
Elsewhere on the African continent, lesbian and gay activists are making gradual progress in the political arena. Fadza Muparutsa of GALS, Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, reported on the roadblocks to social justice in her country at last fall's World Conference of the International Lesbian and Gay Association. Her remarks were recorded by Uma Kali Shakti, a South Asian, South Pacific black disabled dyke from New Zealand, who's currently a producer at 2SERFM's Gay Waves program in Sydney, Australia.
I'm just going to talk a bit on how our sexual politics in Zimbabwe works and what the social justice system is doing to disable the movement of the gays and lesbians. Basically, what happens is in Zimbabwe, as women, I'm talking on the side of women. As women, we are born with no rights, sexually that is. As a child, a teenager, and a fully blown, blooming woman, you have no sexuality. Your ideal and your role in society is to be a mother, to be pregnant, and to be nurturing. So in the case where we have a difference within the society where we have bisexual women and lesbian women, there then is a conflict between culture, nature, and nurture. So we find ourselves being working against what's going on within the social movement because they're basically a government institution. Most NGOs and to a greater extent, the women's movement, is all funded by the government. So whenever we try and present a case to these institutions, we find ourselves constantly hitting against a wall where we cannot at any time present something that is coming from lesbian women as women to try and help ourselves within the society. In this point, what happens then is that a woman who is different, lesbian or bisexual, is then forced into a situation where she has to conform to society's norm and then get herself into a heterosexual relationship, which then presents a lot of problems that the social justice system is not at this point trying to address. There are a number of times where we have networks with organizations that are human rights based, but then they aren't doing that much to help us, because in the case where they try to help us, the government is there to block them in any move that they try and make to try and accommodate homosexuals within the community. I'll bring to point the 1998 referendum that was done in Zimbabwe, where we tried to change the constitution and include the sexual orientation clause. This was, I suppose, a milestone within Zimbabwe, because the clause was included, but it did not have the point that we had addressed to the constitution as a whole. They then changed it into natural differences, which is natural differences, absolutely nothing to do with sexual orientation, and still did not do away with the law, with the custom law that's there about sodomy and homosexuality. So there are still a lot of things that we still feel we need to address within the social justice system and try and educate them on the differences that are there within gender sexuality as human beings. So maybe on this point that I'm stressing, the rights of women, human rights, the rights to their bodies and their sexuality, that's what the main problem is right now. Thank you very much.
That was Fadza Mufurutsa of Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, recorded by Umakali Shakti at the recent International Lesbian and Gay Association World Conference in Manila. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, Nancy Beverly, and Umakali Shakti contributed program material. Thanks also to Kathy Sanchez. Sweet Honey in the Rock, Paul Simon, and David Hewitt performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on planetout.com. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from Clarissa Pincola Estes, La Sociedad de Guadalupe Foundation, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. You too can help keep this program on the air and get some queer history and culture CDs as our gifts. For all the details, log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everybody at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on CJLY Nelson, British Columbia, WRUW Cleveland, Ohio, KUCR Riverside, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.